Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SweatNet Be Amazing podcast, where we share stories of amazing women living in our communities. I am your host, Seal, and today my guest is Neshe Faulkner. She is a wave maker, a life coach, and a mama bear. Welcome to the show, Neshe.
Hi.
I'm so glad you're here. We have so much to talk about.
Yes.
So, and I want to go ahead and jump right in to the first question I have for you. I know you practice yoga. I know you have been a runner. I know that you dance. Is this something that have you always been active?
Yes. My parents were young when they had me, so I was the only child for a while, and always had to make sure that I was busy, because if they didn't, I was really going to be busy at home with them. So they always made sure that I had opportunities to play sports. Anything that I wanted to try, my parents made a way for me to be able to try it, stick with it, practice, travel, play, whatever it was. So I played softball, fast pitch softball, volleyball, and then I even cheered in seventh grade in middle school, so it counts that I am officially also a cheerleader.
High fives on that, like double high five. Right. That comes from my world, so I totally appreciate. Yeah.
So seventh grade, I was a cheerleader, was totally shocked that I made the team, and I did, but then my school got a softball team, and I always wanted to play softball, so I ended my cheerleading career, and from eighth grade on through every summer, every year, I played slow fit pitch, and then we moved into fast pitch until I graduated from from high school.
That's so cool. Like, you and I have similar backgrounds in how we were raised. My parents did the same thing. Like, they just made a way for you to do it. Like, you did whatever activity was available. Like, that's what we did, and it changed. And then I found my love for dance and cheer and all that, but I did the same thing, basketball, softball, like if it was available, we did it. And my sister and I were like that, my brother too. So that's awesome. Well, out of all the things, all the activities that you've done, what's your favorite?
My favorite has to be from growing up, it has to be dance. I danced as a kid, and then volleyball became way cooler than dance. And so I gave up dance. And then in college, I found my way back to dance. It's funny, nobody in my high school really knew I was in the band. I hit it very well. I played the flute, the French horn, and the piccolo. And I was supposed to go to college on a band scholarship.
What? Like, this is new information.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't tell you this. I was supposed to go to college on a band scholarship playing the French horn or the flute. And when I got there, I was totally mesmerized by these girls that were dancing and practicing at band camp, because that's when we went to audition. And I said, I'm going to audition. I mean, I already know I'm here for a band. You know, I'm going to be at this school regardless. So I'm going to audition. And I actually became the only freshman on the team, in which they didn't usually allow freshman dancers. But I became the only freshman on the team. And then from there, I reconnected with my dance roots, my African dance roots from a kid. And that experience all the way in college has been like the one that's made like the biggest impression on me, and has combined all of the other things that I gained from all the sports that I played: the coordination, the lightness, the agility, the stamina. I've been able to like take a little bit of everything that I've learned along the way, cheerleading, the choreography, and really use all of that into my dance life. So
That's so awesome because I love that because it's like you dance early on and then it was like you focused on the sports side and then all of a sudden it comes back. And then in this incredible way with African dancing, which I, you know, explain to us a little bit about that for you. Like, what is that and, you know, how you're involved with that now?
So African dance is a dance that's based from the continent of Africa. There are so many forms of African dance because the continent is so vast. So specifically, I teach, perform, and teach and perform traditional West African dance, which is the coast, the western coast of Africa. And I specifically focus on Ghanaian from the country Guinea, and then Cote d'Ivoire and Ivory Coast dance, with a little bit of like Senegalese, Malian dance mixed in there as well. And African dance is physical movements to drumming, singing that reflect an ethnic group's way of living, their cultural celebrations, ceremonies, the day-to-day life that they live is reflected and preserved through the music and the dance. And so whenever I'm doing or, you know, teaching or performing dance, is very important for us to explain to people, like, this is what it is, this is who does it, this is what it means, because otherwise it kind of devalues it as if we're just doing a 5, 6, 7, 8 routine. And it's not just a bunch of random moves that we put together because we thought they would look good and go well with this music. It's been specific dances that were created and named after ancestors, specific rhythms that were named after people or places or cultural celebrations and ceremonies that were created and still are celebrated on the continent. So locally, I have my own dance company. I co-founded a dance company here in Charlotte, Shea Movement African Arts. We teach a community class every Thursday. It's virtual, and for the month of July, it's free. And then I also am a part of UNC Charlotte's dance department. So I typically teach traditional West African dance as well as performance practicum, where those students have to audition to be in class to learn specific choreography to perform in either the fall or the spring dance concert.
Oh, that's awesome. Like, it was really interesting because when I saw African dance, you know, just and saw it on your Instagram and then wanted to talk to you about it. And of course we did have that conversation earlier. And it's amazing to me, like, just like you said, like how important it is for people to understand the reason why and what it's really about. And it's not just movement. There's so much more to it. So I really appreciate you sharing that, because that, to me, that was really important to share with other people, because you see the colors and what you wear and just the intention behind it, and it's beautiful. So yeah. I really appreciate you sharing that.
I think so too. And then, you know, traveling back and forth from Africa, going to dance conferences to learn from master dancers and drummers, like, this is their way of life, and the fact that they are willing to share is humbling in itself. And so I try my best not to do an injustice to what they are so freely giving to anyone who's open to receive it. So whenever I'm teaching, you know, you don't leave without knowing what you did. And I always tell people, if you ever go to a class and the teacher doesn't know the dance, the style, the ethnic, you know, background, or the name of the rhythm, a song, then you really need to be mindful of whether or not that person has the right intent for teaching. And that's really for anything. If you, just because someone is teaching you something doesn't mean that they're qualified to do so. And you have every right to know the why
and the how behind, you know, any activity that you're doing. So
I would agree with you on that. I think it's really important. It's important to know the why, the person, the intent, all of that, that plays such a huge role, especially in teaching or in coaching someone in anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, yeah, that's right on point. So let's talk about the three things about you that are, that describe you on your IG, which I love, which we're going to go back to what they are. So it's wave maker, life coach, and mama bear. And the one thing that I was really intrigued by was the first thing that you describe yourself as is a wave maker.
Yeah.
What inspired you to use that in your description?
Well, if you know me, you already know the answer to that.
I know, but I have to have you just say it.
And if you don't know me, then you will really reflect on what a wave does. It's beautiful. It breaks up the monotony of what's happening. It engages your attention sometimes immediately. It can not necessarily bring about fear, but really have you in the present moment of really trying to understand like the high and why of things of why things are happening. My husband is calling me. And I consider myself a wave maker because I've always had a heart for not necessarily going with the status quo and truly being a voice and shaking things up in hopes of supporting people who don't always have a voice. And it's so easy to say, like, just say how you feel, or, you know, just do what you want to do in life. And because everyone doesn't feel comfortable doing that, someone has to do the work to recognize that this population of people needs someone to advocate or speak up for them. And it's not because they don't have anything to say. It's because maybe they've been silenced in some kind of way. It's because maybe, you know, they have tried and they don't feel comfortable. Or, you know, sometimes it's maybe because they've been taught that they don't have a voice to stand up for what they believe is right, or, you know, specific justice related issues. And so I've always considered myself a wave maker, like shaking things up, breaking up the monotony. Sometimes I come at you fast and almost knock you down. And then sometimes I just, you know, send gentle nudges of, hey, like, we got to pay attention here. So yeah.
Well, and I want to kind of, let's just go into this question. I had sent you a list and we were going to go down the list, but I think this will take us right into one of the questions I had for you. And is a perfect example of you being a wave maker. On June 24th, SweatNet hosted a town hall led by you, Jamison Huff, and Grace Millsap. And it was an open conversation around racial injustice. And I was on there because I wanted to be a part of this. I wanted to listen and be open. And there were about 100 people or more that had joined the call. And you gave an opportunity for people to speak up and say how they felt. Am I, you know, going into that, how did you feel before you even did the town hall? And then how did you feel after?
I going into that town hall, I was really paying attention to all of the things that were happening, you know, around us. There were protests happening. We had just witnessed the death of a man who literally begged for his life for almost 9 minutes. We had just a few weeks before that seen another Black man gunned down just for running in a neighborhood. you know, months before that, it was something else. Weeks after or weeks before, it was Brianna. Years before, it was Trayvon. And, you know, there were all these things building up to this moment. And then when George Floyd was killed, it really halted everyone in a way to where, with quarantine and not being able to distract, really had to see, or it was an opportunity for you to see, that BIPOC people aren't making this up. You know, like, there are specific things happening to Black people and Black men in our community. So I was already in my wave maker mode, you know, calling upon people to really look and see, and having those uncomfortable conversations with my white friends. Because if we don't have this conversation, we can't really say we're friends. And so preparing for that town hall, I wanted to give space for people to share, not just Black people, but also white people, because I recognize that there are many white allies that risk their lives and do go out of their way to do the work. And so I really wanted it to be a space where everyone could just listen and not respond, not say how you felt based off of what someone else said, not say that that wasn't true or that's not how you saw it. Because I felt like part of the reason why we've gotten here or how we've gotten here is because we have a lack of listening skills. Most often when we're listening, we're distracted. Most often when we're listening, we are defensive. Most often when we're listening, we just don't really care what you're saying, and I'm formulating my argument back to you in my head. And so I thought, you know, I contacted Jameis and said, you know, Jameis, we've been trying to do some things together as my white friend with your influence. I need you to gather your white friends and let's sit down at the table and really listen to what's happening in the world in a safe, that in a space that is brave to have you to share that experience. So that's where I was leading up to it, because I also realized that everybody's form of activism looks differently. Everyone isn't going to go downtown and protest, and that doesn't make their form of activism more or less than me specifically holding one-on-one conversations with my white friends. Afterwards, I felt a sense of, we got a lot of work to do afterwards. Because while BIPOC people have been dealing with this for me all my life, many of my, you know, white friends or white associates or, you know, population just come into the terms that this thing exists. And so knowing that it exists is the pre-work. And so I left that call thinking, you know what, this town hall, we need to do two more of these, because now that you have awakened, now we need to learn about what it means now, because before I couldn't even teach you what it meant. Now that you see that it exists, now we can talk about what it means. And then now that you know what it means, you keep asking me, what can you do? So that's where we'll go next. Now we'll how to lead and how you can truly help and be an ally and be a part of the activism that needs to happen, that can't just happen with BIPOC people, because I've been a wave maker, I feel like, all my life, and I still somewhat live in the same world that my grand and great grandparents lived in. Yeah, that's how I felt before, during, and afterwards.
You know, part of the reason the conversation with you was so important was to continue the conversation of what you started with the first town hall. And I know that you are truly a wave maker and that you're inspiring that in other people. There's been a period of time where, you know, not knowing exactly what to say or how to move forward. And that for me was like, well, that's how this podcast is going to be used, is to open up conversation, to continue mm-hmm. it so that the work doesn't stop. And so that, you know, we can keep moving forward in the right direction as a community, and mm-hmm. having women like yourself, you know, who are wave makers, who can come on and share from the heart and be real and be authentic. And I greatly appreciate that about you. And I appreciate the town halls, and I appreciate what you're doing for the community as a whole. I really do just appreciate you being just straight. You're straight up. That's all I'm about to say. You're a wave maker. You're straight up. There, you know, it's just, this is how it is. Like, I really appreciate that about you.
The mama bear part of me, you know, like, now that I've shaken you up, yes. and the life coach is, you know, the life coach is like, now that we've learned,
right.
now let mama bear give you a hug. It's right. okay. We're going to do better the next time, right?
Right. We're going to self-do better.
Yeah, that is the thread, the wave maker, the life coach, the mama Love bear, because we always have to say, you know, sign mama bear.
Love it, because it's every bit like when you go on Instagram and you read descriptions of people, and it would just, that just hit me as soon as I read your three words. I was like, oh my gosh, like that to me is like such a perfect description. And like, I just, each particular part, like it's just real. Like, it's who you are. It's not something, you're not trying to find something to make, you know, to say, well, you know, this is what I want to be, or this is what I think I am. No, this is who you are.
Yeah,
that's just,
yeah, I've had many people to say, oh, like, that have met me in person, they're like, oh, you, this is really you. And I'm like, yeah, it is really me. Like, I still have my college students who, whoo, you know, those end of semester evaluations, they can be brutal sometimes. And the head of my department, she's like, you know, Niche, your end of semester evaluation is always the best ones for me to read, because she's like, they all say that you do not play games, like, do not play when you come to class. And you know, those same students, like, I couldn't get rid of them even if I wanted to.
Right.
Like, I seriously still have kids who graduated 2 and 3 years now are just like, can I please come back and take class next semester? Or can I please come to class on Thursdays? You know, like, I'm mama bear. Like, I have 50 and 60 year old women that I know that call me mama bear. Like,
that's
it's hilarious to me. And like, you know, that's who I am. Anytime someone sees something mama bear, they buy it for me.
Because that's so awesome. Like, I just think there's just something about that. And like, the people are drawn to you for that reason. Like,
yeah.
There. That's just like, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's hilarious. Okay.
So I want to steer now into a teaching side, but a different side. I know that yoga is a big part of your life, and I know teaching others, like, that's a really big, important part to you.
Yeah.
And especially your little 5-year-old who knows when it's time to meditate and have time, you know, yoga time. How did all of this start for you?
Well, yoga became a part of my life. 6 years ago, my son is five. 6 years ago, I was pregnant and experienced miscarriage. And at the time, I became depressed, which I didn't really realize at the time, but I was depressed. And I put a strain on my marriage because I was hurting, he was hurting, I blamed myself. He didn't know how to support me. We decided to forego Thanksgiving break with the family, and we went to Hilton Head instead. While we were there, I went to a bookstore. I remember purchasing a book about like healing and things like that. And then while we were there, there was a yoga class on the beach. And I went to that class, and I just felt better isn't the right word, because it wasn't necessarily better, but I just felt something like a crack, like almost like a crack in the egg, you know, to like my feelings coming out of that. And when I got back, I got an email randomly from Yoga One, who I had unsubscribed to. And somehow I made it back to their mailing list, saying that they were going to do a 40-day practice where you practice in the studio 5 days a week, you practice on your own one day, and you rested a day. And then we were going to go through a book and do a lot of inquiry work. And I just signed up and told my good friend, Felicia, like, hey, we're signing up for this. And she was just like, okay. So neither one of us really practiced yoga. And from there, I was drawn. Like, I noticed each day a little bit more crack in the egg, more feelings coming out, more healing happening. And it got to the point where I practiced every day. I didn't know what a down dog or chaturanga or vinyasa was. And I was just doing what everybody else did and trying to figure it out along the way. And I knew that I got stronger, that I wouldn't get as upset. I wasn't as sad. And I'm not saying that yoga is a substitute for therapy. And it was just something about that physical practice that helped me. So from there, I became a yoga assistant, did that for a few years, did my teacher training, and then I became a yoga teacher. And I really wanted to do it because as women and as a BIPOC community, we don't always have the access that we need to the things that we need the most. And sometimes that's because we don't give ourselves permission to engage in them. But I wanted to become a teacher because I just felt in my heart that women need this. You know, BIPOC people need this. And I know what it would feel like if I saw myself in that studio standing in front of the classroom. Like, how many more people could I reach if they had someone to guide them that looked like them? And I really wanted to offer that, especially at a vulnerable time in my life where I was blaming myself for something that was out of my control. And at the time, I was running, I was training for a triathlon, I was swimming, I was biking. And immediately once I had my miscarriage, I was like, oh, see, I did it to myself. I shouldn't have been so active. I should have just sat my ass down somewhere. It's my fault. And then I started to realize that, you know, I didn't know that you were more likely to have a miscarriage than you were to carry a baby full term. I didn't know that you didn't just get pregnant and have a baby. Like, I thought that was the path that everybody took. Why? Because, and then once I publicly said, I found out that my baby had transitioned on my birthday. And so I purposely scheduled the appointment for that day because I was like, it's my birthday, so I'm going to have to celebrate. I can't be sad all day. So if we're going to go in and find out, let's find out on my birthday. So every year, so that next year, my birthday came around. A few months later, I did get pregnant with Chan. He's my rainbow baby. But a few years later, that next year, I said, you know what? I'm going to tell what happened to me. During that time, I also was training for a half marathon too. So running this half marathon, I'm crying the whole way. People don't understand what's going on. Like, there's just so much happening. And the next year I said, you know, I'm going to say something about this. Like, I'm going to publicly share, like, hey, I had a miscarriage. You're not broken if you've had one too. It's so common, and it's more common than you think it is. So, like, don't beat yourself up, sis, because it's not your fault. Like, there isn't anything you did. It's not a punishment. And that's really what I felt like it was when it was happening to me. And I just felt like if more people would, not saying that people weren't open, you know, I'm sure people were open to like their specific circle of influence, their parents, their friends, you know, that their coworkers, whoever. And it's just such a taboo subject that I know once I told people that very first time, I had at least 20 women inbox me to say, thank you so much. I just had a miscarriage, or I had one 2 years ago, or I've had several, and no one has ever said that it's not my fault that this is happening to me. It's not a punishment. And so every year I honor those women and all the other women who are going on through miscarriage, one by trying to run a half marathon during that time, to just honor that experience for other women. And I make sure that I publicly like say something about it, and as much as I can, and as much as it relates to what's happening or what I'm thinking about at the time, I always just try to make sure that I bring it up, because, you know, it sucks when you feel like you're going through something by yourself. And even though it still may suck, but if you know if like at least one more person gets it from your point of view, then it just, it makes it feel like you're not in it alone. Like, you're not by yourself. In that experience. And there are miscarriage boards and things out there, but good Lord, they are like on the interwebs or the black web or something, because I just couldn't find them, or find really any information that was out there that was from a human and not from WebMD to tell me what a miscarriage is, but to say, hey, I've had a miscarriage. This is what I went through emotionally. You're not by yourself, and it's not your fault. Like, that's the information I feel like we need out there for mental health issues, female-related issues, infertility. Like, it just feels like it's so taboo, and so many women and BIPOC people suffer in silence. Because the world has told us that it's just not okay to talk about things that aren't happy. Like, that's just not what you do. And we aren't perfect, nor do we have a perfect Instagram feed. Like, that's not our life. And I don't get to take 20 pictures until I get the right one in my real life. Like, if something happens, it's happening right then and there. And it would be nice to go to someone's Instagram feed and see, like, oh, you suffer from depression too? Thank you. You have anxiety as well? Oh, okay. Like, you're scared to do that thing? thank you, or you've had a miscarriage, or you've gone through a divorce or separation, or you've lost a parent, like those kinds of things is what people need. And it's just, it baffles me of how much we are afraid to show what people perceive as weakness. To me, is like strength. So
I would agree with you. And I like, that's what this was, again, like having you on here and these conversations that we're having about real, like this is real. This is being open. It challenges me myself too, like sharing things in my own life that I haven't shared. But just that you're every bit a wave maker. You're every bit of opening the door of conversations, awkward, weird, uncomfortable.
Right.
But with such love, like you do it in such a loving manner. And, you know, just like the town hall opened that conversation, we're opening this conversation now about miscarriage. And, you know, I love what you said that, you know, just telling women they're not alone and that it's not their fault. And just being able to be open about it and sharing that experience, like this, to me, that's, that shows incredible strength. And it's something we need more of, and we need more of that, whether yeah. it's on social media or whether it's through podcasts like we're doing now, wherever, like we need more of that. So I really, again, this is an incredible conversation, and we're probably going longer than we should, but that's okay, because this to me is the value, like this is what this is all about. And kind of ending it, going from that to, is there anything else on your heart? Like, is there anything else that you feel really like inspired or led to share with our audience?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that, I'd like to share with people is like, don't be afraid to be a wave maker. Don't perceive that as something negative. Like if you don't feel the same way as someone, if you have a different view about something in relation to how the world sees it, it doesn't mean that you're wrong, and express it and do it with, do it with compassion and grace, because we're all different. We're not all meant to be and see and do it. Everyone's not going to see my point of view, and I think that people are more open to the possibility of even hearing, listening to my words, because at the end of the day, I am not trying to hurt, cause harm to, belittle, or just like be nasty with someone. And it's not always easy for me to say, you know what, look at it this way. And I always think, if I don't say things, how is that going to impact those who are suffering with me, this next generation? How will me being silent impact my son? And how was, you know, my ancestors, my grandparents, you know, my elders and my family, how would their silence have impacted me? So, you know, I don't really have but an option to share my perspective with the world. And I think that there's a way to do it in a way that doesn't belittle or cause harm to other people. And I feel like it's all of our duties to be wave makers and speak up for injustice, immorality. Like, we're supposed to all call it out when we see it, because otherwise and those who trust you may not see you
in the same light when you remain silent for your comfort, knowing that your fellow man is in a state of discomfort. So that's the biggest thing I would say is, be a wave maker, stand up for what you believe and know that, your voice is just as powerful as your neighbors, and you have the right to be heard just like anyone else does.
This has been an incredible conversation. It's been inspiring, and, even from an educational standpoint, to a call to action to be a wave maker, I think is how we need to end it. Where can everybody find you?
Let's see, on Instagram, you can find me at Niche Cultured Flow. My coffee chats are the best. Grab your cup of coffee every morning and come and learn about the world through Nishay's eyes. And then virtually, if you click the link in my bio, you can come to yoga class, African dance every Thursday at 7:30. Everybody can come and learn, heal together, be in community with each other.
This is awesome. Well, Nishay, thank you so much for being on today and sharing your heart and inspiring us all. And thank you, listeners, again, for joining us and tuning in to the SweatNet Be Amazing podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to like it, share it with your friends. You can find more about SweatNet on sweatnet.com. or on the Instagram, and their new Instagram is at SweatNet Charlotte. You can follow me personally on Instagram at @itsealsmart. Tune in next week for our next episode of the SweatNet Be Amazing podcast.